From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later on, does Iran have flying saucer technology? Whoa, get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Fiscal cliff. With little to show after a month of posturing, the White House and Republicans in Congress dropping hints that they have resumed low-level private talks on breaking the stalemate over the fiscal cliff, but they have refused to divulge any information, so we don't know what's really going on yet. Hundreds of thousands of genetically modified mosquitoes are awaiting federal approval for release into the Florida Keys as part of an experiment aimed at reducing a risk of fever. Mosquito control officials have requested that the FDA sign off on the experiment that would be the first of its kind in the U.S. Some residents of the tourist town of Key West worry, though, on just how much research has been done to determine the risks of releasing genetically modified mosquitoes on the Keys' fragile ecosystem. That's an amazing story. We got to do more on this in the next few days. Washington State made history as the first in the nation to legalize marijuana for adult recreational use, an occasion celebrated by dozens of users near Seattle's famed Space Needle amid blaring reggae music and a haze of pot smoking. The pre-dawn public gathering, though, defied a key provision of the state's landmark marijuana law, which allows possession of small amounts of marijuana but forbids users from lighting up outside the privacy of their own homes. The gathering also underscored mixed law enforcement messages about the statute. Hours earlier, Seattle City Attorney issued a very stern warning that public pot puffing would not be tolerated and that violators faced citations with $100 fines. Chris Conrad, court-qualified expert on cannabis and curator of the Hash Marijuana Hemp Museum in Amsterdam. Chris, let me get your take on this first of all. Washington being the first state to do this, what will the feds do? What do you think?
Well, I think the most important thing to notice is that the world did not end today, George. Even though we do have the marijuana legalized in these states, the administration has been silent on this whole thing since before the election. Even during the campaigns,
right,
they didn't come out. And right now, they haven't said anything. But the problem is that the clock is ticking on state legislatures to take some action, and they don't really know what the feds are going to do.
Now, with regards to the state of Washington, you can't distribute it and you can't grow it. Is that correct?
That's correct, and you can't drive under the influence. So it's more important than ever that people not smoke marijuana in their cars, because that would be the thing that would trigger a police investigation. The other thing is that marijuana up to an ounce would no longer be probable cause, no ticket and no arrest. So this is a major milestone for America.
How do you know somebody's under the influence of marijuana if they get stopped with a violation, traffic violation?
Well, generally speaking, marijuana doesn't really affect people's driving that much. It makes them maybe drive a little slower. The thing that the law enforcement, I'm sure, will be watching for is the odor of marijuana in the car. Because if someone has been smoking in the vehicle, then they're going to have those elevated levels of THC in their system that will test in a drug test as being under the influence. They have this new percentage standard that they're using, 5 nanograms per milliliter of blood. So it's not based upon your performance. It's based upon the quantity of THC in your bloodstream.
In Washington, where are people legally going to be able to buy pot?
Well, that's actually the first big issue that the legislature has to deal with, and that's why the silence on the part of the administration has two possible impacts. The first would be that it'll, because without federal leadership, that the states will go ahead and develop their own systems. The second is that we'll see what happened in California and other medical marijuana states, where the administration takes a position where they seem amiable, and then all of a sudden they come back later on and they say, oh, we're just kidding. Now we're going to start enforcing federal law over people. So there's a lot of question as to how it's going. My own sense of it, though, is that we've crossed some sort of a big turning point in the 100 years since the first state laws against marijuana were passed, 75 years since the Federal Marijuana Tax Act, and 40 years since the Schaefer Commission in 1972, under President Nixon, called for possession of marijuana to be decriminalized. We actually have two states that have done that. And so a lot of people think this is the tipping point, that we're going to see a Gordon towards legalization, and that the administration, with these new studies, polls showing 58% and 56% support for legalization, that they can't really push that back at this point, that Obama's in a unique position as president to to be able to do some things that no other president had the opportunity to do, particularly this budget crunch, it's a good time to say, well, you know, we're arresting 850,000 people a year. It's not a good use of resources, and we can save some money just by curbing in these marijuana laws and enforcement at the federal and state level. So I think that he would be foolish, actually, to go after, try to stop the states at this point. And right now, he's made no effort to do so, so I'm optimistic.
We're going to watch this unfold. Thank you, Chris. Now, if you're a parent, how many times have you said to your kid, you're going to be the death of me? Well, now the opposite apparently is true. A new study suggesting that being childless may increase the risk of dying prematurely, especially in women. Scientists say the study throws new light on the age-old question of whether life fulfillment provided by children can actually extend your years. As we have been saying on Coast to Coast for so many years, cognitive behavioral therapy can reduce symptoms of depression in people who fail to respond to drug treatment, according to a study now. CBT is a type of psychotherapy was found to be beneficial in nearly half of the 234 patients who received it combined with normal care from their doctor. Up to two-thirds of the people with depression do not respond to antidepressants. A team of former NASA executives has launched a private venture to send two people to the moon for $1.4 billion. Golden Spike Company says it will use existing rocket and capsule technology and will aim for a first launch before the end of the decade. The firm is one of many new private firms hoping to follow the success of SpaceX, which has ferried a cargo to the International Space Station already. So that's an incredible story, too. Lots of people on December 21st, 2012, having no idea what's going to happen, are throwing events, are throwing parties, some of them the end of the world. How about the Cosmic Convergence Festival? None other than Ancient Aliens star Giorgio Tsoukalos. What is this all about, Georgie?
Well, like you know, George, and like many, many listeners of Coast to Coast know, I've always been the one guy in this entire field who said that the biggest concern that we should have about December 21st is the massive hangover we'll all have on December 22nd. So in order to ensure that hangover, we are organizing a party at the Sugar Mill in New Orleans, Louisiana, and we're organizing a one-day festival to prevent the end of the world. And we've got Ghostland Observatory headlining for us, and we're incredibly excited to be hosting that event.
In the wee hours, probably about 1 o'clock in the morning your time down there in New Orleans, make sure you have a radio with you, you're listening to Coast, and you call in on that day, okay?
Absolutely. That will be a done deal. And if people are interested how to find out more about this stuff, they can simply go to CosmicFestNOLA.com, and all the details are available there, including our Twitter page, which is CosmicFest on Twitter.
Very good, Giorgio. Good luck. Giorgio Tsoukalos, star of Ancient Aliens. He's going to party on down through December 21st, 2012. Up next, David Darling joins us, the British astronomer. We're going to be talking about doomsday prophecy next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. David Darling, British astronomer from the University of Manchester in England, noted author, Mega Catastrophes, We Are Not Alone, Why We Have Already Found Extraterrestrial Life, Teleportation, just to name a few. David, welcome back. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, George. I got my strong coffee by me here. It's early morning here in the UK, but good to go.
Got you for a couple hours tonight, David. And as we look at the scenarios around December 21st, 2012, people are still saying, gosh, I don't know if it's going to be the end of the world. Maybe not. Maybe it is. What's David Darling's take on all this?
Well, we're getting pretty close to it now, aren't we?
Just sure.
Away. So I think that rules out some things. But I was actually, you know, thinking the other day, well, we're 2 weeks away. What could possibly still happen? What's still feasible that might not necessarily bring the world to an end, but have some sort of dramatic effect? And you can probably rule out things like, for example, a supervolcano eruption, because there'd be some early signs of that. earlier than 2 weeks, mm-hmm. unless we've got that really badly wrong. So there's some things like that that you could probably eliminate. Other things, of course, can happen very quickly. For example, an alien invasion that we didn't know about.
that could happen at any time.
It could happen any time. So that sort of thing is a complete unknown. A fast-spreading disease, for example, something like, say, airborne Ebola, could possibly spread in that kind of time. And there could be some other scenarios. You know, people worry about collisions, alignments, and that type of thing, galactic alignments. And I've been looking into all that kind of stuff, and we can probably talk about that later and discuss whether it's feasible or not. But there are still some things that are on the cards, shall we say. I would put it as remote possibilities, and we're having an end of the world party here as well, but on the 27th we've got a flight booked to Florida, so I'm hedging my bets, as it were, on that one.
And what about
not getting any sleep right now, but there are still some options. Yeah.
What about the possibility, David, of something from the sun, some kind of X flare, something like that?
Yeah. Well, you know, the worry there is that the sun is approaching a maximum next year. It goes through these cycles of activity, and 2013 is the year when it will reach its next peak. Now, these, as you say, X flares, these exceptionally strong solar flares, which release a huge amount of energy. In fact, one of the pictures that we've put up on the panel to go with this talk shows the sun in relation to the Earth and how enormous these things are. They're truly frightening when you look at the size of them. Now, the biggest X flare on record was back in the mid-19th century. Yeah, it was called the Carrington event, after the guy that first noticed something was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the surge of energy from that, when it arrived at the Earth, was so powerful, you know, it disturbs the Earth's magnetic field, which then induces currents, which can travel to the surface. It traveled along what would then telegraph wires, because that's the way people were communicating in those days, and actually caused fires in a number of telegraph offices, just this powerful current surging through the equipment. And that is the strongest flare on record. Now, something like that probably happens every couple hundred years or so. We don't know the exact interval. It's not like regular or anything. But if one of those sort of flares happened, and presumably they could be even stronger than that, then we would be in serious trouble. Not, you know, our survival wouldn't be put at risk possibly, but our technology would be. You know, all of those commsats that we've got up there.
All gone.
All gone. They could literally all be gone, all wiped out, non-functional. And then that would take years to replace. You know, you can't just suddenly launch.
Yeah, how many?
900 satellites.
Yeah, 900. And they've been up there for how many years, David?
Well, in some cases, more than a decade. I mean, not obviously they're being launched all the time, but some of them are very old. But they're all vulnerable to this sort of energy pulse. And, of course, equipment on the ground as well, computer equipment on the ground, GPS systems, power grids. A very, very strong event like those Carrington flare I was talking about could knock out a large percentage of that technology. And we would then be thrown into the dark ages, effectively. You know, we rely so much on this communications business these days. You know what it's like when the internet goes down for a while, at least.
Oh, yeah, we're all frustrated, yeah.
Yeah, you don't know what to do, you lose your mobile phone connection or something. Just imagine if that happened all over the planet for days and days. It wouldn't threaten our survival. Life would still go on, but it could threaten the fabric of civilization until we got things back up again.
Well, for example, do we have backup satellites right now to put in place in case the others go down?
Absolutely not, no. There would be a few that could be launched earlier, but there is not like a battery of satellites just waiting on the ground to be launched if all of these were knocked out. It would take many years to replace the whole system.
And there's a possibility that the electronics on the planet would not be capable of launching missiles or rockets, right?
Exactly, and that... All of that equipment have to be replaced. Radar, for example, could be knocked out by it. There's so much sensitive electronics around the planet that we depend on now that something like that event, we're not really prepared for it at all. There is no immediate backup. Things would slowly get back to normal, but it would take a very, very long time. And in between then, there could be a lot of social unrest. You really don't know. There's been nothing like it in the past to compare it with. We really don't know what would happen if communications around the planet was suddenly blacked out like that.
Well, stores would be closed. You couldn't get money from a bank. Everything would instantly start collapsing. Within days, people would be attacking each other.
Well, there'd certainly be major unrest, I think, and as you say, there'd be no transfer of money. There would be there'd be probably a lot of movement of stuff around the planet. Plane travel would be severely disrupted. Even ships depend on GPS systems for navigation. So the whole of the transport system would fail until you know it could be brought back up again.
What about the asteroid? I mean, most of them that we find, David, they've zoomed past us already. What are the chances of getting hit by those when we just merely wake up in the morning and find out on our news that we've been hit?
Yeah, it could happen. I mean, we're finding more and more asteroids all the time. Now, we know about 9,000 what are called near-Earth asteroids. These are ones that, obviously by the name, they can come reasonably close to the Earth. Now, of those 9,000, about 1,300 are classed as potentially hazardous asteroids. Now, these are the ones we really have to keep a close eye on because they can come fairly close to the Earth. In fact, the definition of a potentially hazardous asteroid is that it can come closer than 5 million miles to the Earth, which in space terms is right next door. And they have to be roughly 300 feet or more across. So big enough, in other words, if they did hit, to do quite a lot of regional damage at least. So that's the definition of what these things are. We know 1,300 of those out there. And the latest survey by the WISE spacecraft, the Wide Field Infrared Satellite, which has been doing a big survey of these types of asteroids, from that survey, we know that probably only about a quarter of them are known. So about, 70 to 80% of them are still unknown. So there's that many asteroids out there we still don't know about. So maybe 4,500 altogether. We only know about 1,300. And we do have to be concerned about the ones that we don't know about. Now, the ones we do know about, there's a scale. It's called the Torino scale, which measures how dangerous these things are. And it goes from zero, from no hazard, we don't have to worry about, up to 10, which is certain, certain impact by a very large object that could threaten the future of civilization.
Would Apophis be a 10?
Apophis would be possibly not a 10. Apophis is the one asteroid that has had the highest ranking so far. It got to number 4 on the scale.
Okay.
Now it's gone back to zero again because of refinements in the orbital calculation, so it's not expected to be a problem. Of all the potentially hazardous asteroids we know about, all of them now are ranked at zero, apart from 2, which are ranked at 1. So there's nothing really to be concerned about on the known horizon. But as I say, we only know of maybe a quarter of these things. Now, something that was, say, 50 meters to 100 meters across could suddenly appear out of the blue. I mean, could literally be discovered a day or two in advance and could hit the Earth.
With minimal warning.
With virtually no warning and nothing you could do about it. You could just fall from the sky because it simply had slipped through the net.
How big does an asteroid have to be, David, to cause significant damage? Let's say if it one hits in the ocean.
Well, if it hits in the ocean, it depends where. If it was just offshore, but I mean you're talking about something. If it was say 500 meters across, or say 1,500 feet, if you're thinking in feet. That would be a very serious problem because it would raise a tsunami in whatever
ocean. Huge. 100 foot tsunamis, easy.
They'd be enough to deluge coastal cities around the ocean, yeah.
And if it's asteroid size like that killed the dinosaurs, it could be devastating.
Well, the one that size we would probably know about. It's very unlikely, although it is possible, that there is a potentially hazardous asteroid out there that is that big that we don't know about.
I see.
It's the smaller ones. It's the ones that are sort of, a mile or less. that we have to, because there could be quite a lot of those.
They could wipe out a city, couldn't they?
Oh, definitely. Now, you know, back in 1908, it's only a century ago.
Tunguska.
Fortunately hit, or it exploded in the air above Siberia, so there was nobody around really to experience it or be killed by it. But when people got on the scene, they found 80 million trees, 80 million
just
trees.
Obliterated.
Just flattened, yeah. Radially outward from the epicenter of this explosion. Now, you could imagine if something like that had gone off over, you know, Los Angeles or New York or London.
Deep trouble, deep trouble. David, we're coming back in a moment. We're going to talk about Planet X and also get your take on planetary alignments. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got astronomer David Darling with us. We'll take phone calls next hour. David, let's talk a little bit about Nibiru, Planet X. You and I have talked about it for years. What do you think? Is it out there?
Well, you know, as an astronomer, I'm always interested in the possibility of extra planets in the solar system. Now, I've been reading up a little bit more about this recently, and of course, Nibiru is a planet mentioned by Zechariah Sitchin.
That's right.
In his books. That's where the name comes from originally, and he believed that from the mythology he studied that there was an extra planet that we don't know about in the solar system that occasionally intrudes into the inner solar system and has effects on the Earth, sometimes catastrophic effects. So that's the origin of the name. And then I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but there was a lady, I believe in 1995, Nancy Leader. Nancy Leader, who as it were, elaborated this theory, stemming from her description of having been a contactee with aliens. So that's a little bit of the background. Now, some people are concerned that this planet, if it exists, will arrive on December the 21st, and that will be the event that causes our doom, or at least is going to cause problems for us. So I was looking into this, and let's assume it's the case that there is this 10th planet or Planet X, and that its orbit is very unusual, unlike a normal planet like the Earth or Mars, which goes around the Sun in a reasonably circular orbit. This one is an incredibly stretched out orbit like a comet, so most of the time you can't see it, and then for a short period it plunges into the inner solar system, and now it's on its way in. Well, if it was 2 weeks away, which it would be now,
right,
if it was going to arrive on December 21st, it would have to be reasonably close. It's only got 2 weeks to get.
Oh, you'd see it, right?
It can't be like out by Pluto or something like that. And this planet is supposed to be sizable. It's supposed to be bigger than the Earth. I mean, from my reading, it's supposedly like four times bigger than the Earth. So it's bigger than Mars, much, much bigger than Mars. But it would have to be a lot, lot closer to us now than Mars is. In order to arrive on time, it's only got 2 weeks to get here. It has to be much, much closer than Mars, yet it's much, much bigger than Mars. Well, you know, you can see Mars in the sky when it's on show. It looks like a really bright red star. Well, this planet would be much, much brighter than that. Now, I know people subscribe to the theory that maybe, you know, astronomers or NASA is covering up information about this. Well, who knows, but we would see it ourselves. If it was that close now, if it was going to strike us or come close to us in 2 weeks' time, it would be visible not only in the night sky, it would be visible in the daytime.
If it was behind the sun and was rotating at a point where it always was behind the sun, would we see it?
If it was directly behind the sun and it was close, we would know about it from its gravitational effects on the other planets.
Okay.
But assuming it was approaching us from behind the sun, we are moving relative to the sun. So unless this planet was moving at exactly the same rate as the, because you know the Earth is
as we were
moving around every year, we go around the sun once, so our perspective is changing all the time. So unless this thing was sort of maliciously hiding exactly behind the sun and sort of keeping out of it, and in order to do that, it would have to be roughly in the same orbit as the Earth. It would have to be certainly close to the sun. And we would know about it from other effects. So it can't have been hiding behind the sun the whole time. Otherwise, we would see it due to our motion. So I think that's very, very unlikely.
Okay, let's talk then about the possibility that maybe it is out there, catastrophe. Maybe it's not as close as it should be, but it's out there somewhere.
Well, if it was out there somewhere, and let's say, if it was going to be here by the 21st, and it was much further away so that we couldn't actually see it right now, you know, with at least with our eyes alone, it would have to be moving incredibly fast. It would have to be moving much, much faster than any other object in the solar system. It would have to be moving faster than any of the planets, comets, something that big, and yet we still can't see it. It would have to be well beyond the orbit of Saturn. So to get here in 2 weeks, it would have to be traveling at a fantastic speed. In fact, it would have to travel so fast there's no way it could be in that kind of orbit. It would, once it had gone past the Earth, it would fly off into interstellar space at that kind of speed. So the mechanics of the thing don't really add up. Now, maybe you could say, well, okay, it's not actually going to hit on the 21st. It's going to hit sometime next year, or arrive sometime next year, or in 2 years' time. And that's possible. There could be a planet way, way out there, you know, that we simply can't see right now with our eyes alone, that in due course could eventually arrive here. I cannot be persuaded, however, that it would arrive in 2 weeks' time. I just can't make it work.
I understand.
Yeah.
David, they found a planet that seems to be in its own orbit, basically. It doesn't have a sun. So it's just out there floating around. What do you think of that?
It's great, isn't it? It's really interesting. I mean, it's interesting that we're finding so many different kinds of planets. We knew there were these rogue planets out there. They've been discovered much further away from the Earth, in like the Orion Nebula, for example. A number of these things have been found. We know that they're out there, but to find one that is so, well, it's 100 light years away. It's not exactly next door, but it's much, much closer than anything we've found like this before, and it's just flying through space on its own. Basically, it has no star, and there are going to be lots of these things. This is the first of many that we're going to find. But they're sort of hard to spot because, you know, it's just a planet moving on its own. But there are certainly millions and millions and millions of these sort of loose planets flying around the galaxy for sure. Yeah, very interesting discovery.
Now, the galactic alignment, which is supposed to occur on December 21st, where everything's in line. Could that cause any problem?
Well, the galactic alignment, again, this is something I've been following closely because, of course, we wrote the book on mega catastrophes, so we really have been taking seriously all these issues that people have raised over the years. The term galactic alignment is not something actually in conventional astronomy you tend to run into very much. It's not like the 10th planet or something that astronomers talk about, but it's certainly something that's caught people's attention. And as I understand it, what they're saying is that when the galactic alignment occurs, the Sun and the center of the galaxy, because we live in the Milky Way galaxy, we're part of that. If you imagine the shape of the galaxy to be like a fried egg, or maybe two fried eggs back to back, so the white bit is the disk, and the yolk is the bulge in the center. We live in the disk, so when you look up on a dark night sky, you can see this band of the Milky Way, which is us looking into the plane of the Milky Way. Now, if you look towards the constellation Sagittarius, you're looking towards the center of the galaxy. And in the center of the galaxy, there's a big black hole. It weighs about 4 million times as much as the Sun, and that sits right at the center of our galaxy. Now, the galactic alignment theory or concern is that on the 21st, the Sun and the center of the galaxy will be directly in alignment from the Earth. Now, let's assume, for the sake of argument, that is the case. I'm not going to get into whether that's true or not, but assume it's the case.
And it's conceivable. It's possible, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, at some point it will happen. I mean, so let's assume that it is that date. So the Sun and the center of the galaxy, where we've got this big, big black hole lurking, are in direct alignment with the Earth. So what would happen? Well, we know that the Sun has a big gravitational effect on us because we go around it, we circle around it. It's not going to destroy us, but its gravity force is significant. Now, the only way that this alignment could be a problem is through gravity. The there can't be any other influence at work, like, you know, magnetism or any other sort of strange force. The only effect that the center of the galaxy and the sun have on us in those terms is gravity. So the question is, does this big black hole at the center of the galaxy pose a problem if added to the gravity pull of the sun? Well, the fact is, the center of the galaxy is 26,000 light years away. 26,000 light years away.
That's a pretty good poke.
You say, well, okay, it's a long way away, but it weighs 4 million solar masses, this black hole. It's a significant thing. If you're close to it, it would have a tremendous gravitational pull. But because of the distance, its gravitational effect on us in the solar system is not that strong. It's not capable of disrupting, say, the planets. And that's the worry, is that this alignment will have some devastating effect on the Earth. It will maybe cause earthquakes, or it will shift our orbit or something like that. Well, it would actually have to be 6 million times closer than it is to do that. I'm not trying to purposely scotch these theories, but the gravitational effect of the center of the galaxy is very, very low, and it would have to be 6 million times closer than it is to disrupt the... it would have to be closer than the nearest star, actually, to cause a disruption in the movement of the planets. So even if this alignment occurs, it doesn't seem to make sense that it will have a disruptive effect on it. Just looking at the physics of the situation, you know, unless there's some mystical thing going on that I don't know about, there's no reason why that alignment, even if it happens, should be a problem.
David, the Mayans themselves, I want to get your take on them. They were experts in astronomy. They didn't have equipment. They didn't have telescopes. How did they do this?
Well, the question is, did they do this, and what did they do? Yes, they knew quite a lot about the sky. They studied the motion of the planets. They knew about the constellations. Did they have any special knowledge above and beyond what many ancient peoples, like the Babylonians and the Egyptians, did? They were very clear. You can learn a lot about the sky and space just by studying things with your eyes alone. And these people were just as clever as we were. They just didn't have computers and things like that. The question is, how much did they actually know? What is the evidence that they had some kind of super knowledge beyond what we have? And I'm searching for that. I'm not an archaeologist, so I don't get into that really. I can't pretend to be an expert in that field. I don't see the evidence that they had some secret knowledge, shall we say, that we didn't.
Or given hand-me-down, anything like that.
Well, you know, I'm always open to the possibility of, you know, involvement of aliens and out.
You are, all right. That's pretty good.
It's not an unreasonable, anything that's
not
credible.
Not many scientists would posture the way you'd posture, David.
Well, that's what I try and do. I try and look at things from a balanced point of view. If somebody tells me a very exotic theory, I don't discount it. I say, well, look, let's look at it reasonably. Does it fit with logic? Is it logical, first of all? You know, what's the basis for your story? Are you making it up? Are you hoaxing me? Are you kidding me on? Are you trying to sell your book? Let's eliminate those possibilities, and then let's work our way down the line, and are we left with something at the bottom that is really unexplained? That's just the way I go about it. But the fact that aliens may have been involved in our past is, to me, perfectly reasonable. There's nothing to say that couldn't have happened.
Well, that's true, too. Look, as we look at everything that's been going on, what about this planet particularly, David? You know, we hear these incredible stories of coral reefs dying off, everything else. Is this planet dying or not?
Well, I think we're in a bad way. All the trends look very gloomy. I'm a very optimistic person by nature. And I like to think that things will sort themselves out, or we'll sort them out. But the way things are trending at the moment is just about as gloomy as it could possibly be. You know, species are dying on a regular basis, or are being killed off. The oceans are getting more acid. They're warming up. The whole planet is warming up. Extreme weather conditions are getting more common all the time. Population is growing. Resources are being depleted. When you look at the whole picture And we're not really doing anything about it. It's just getting worse and worse. So I especially when you look at the state of the oceans, which you mentioned, that is going to affect the whole food chain in the ocean, which ultimately is going to affect everything else on the planet. So unfortunately, I'm not seeing good signs of them. I'm not seeing particularly good reasons for hope at the moment.
Why not? Is there anything we can do to change that? Probably not.
Well, there are a lot of schemes we could try, but there has to be the willpower and the investment to go out and do them. These big geoengineering schemes that would affect the whole planet. The problem is you don't quite know what the spin-off of those would be. You don't want to go doing something that's going to cause other problems that you weren't aware of. So, yes, we can do something about it, but at the moment there doesn't seem to be the either political will or even the sort of general will among the public to sort of tackle these things seriously.
Well, I don't think generations think that it's going to happen during their time. So they push it off into the next one, and it keeps going that way.
I think you're absolutely right. It's complacency. And until it's almost literally on your doorstep, as, for example, with Hurricane Sandy, if you attribute that to global effects, then people start to worry when it affects their own homes and their well-being and their livelihood and their safety. Then all of a sudden, it matters. It starts to matter. And that's what's going to kick us into action, is when when our homes start getting flooded or the food starts running out, then we'll start to take action. The trouble is, will it be too late by then?
Well, that's true, too. Large Hadron Collider. Are they finding the God particle as they say they do? And once they do, what does that mean?
Well, it's been found. If by God particle you mean the Higgs boson, that has been discovered, and that's now scientific fact.
What are they going to do with that, though?
Well, it's just a building block of knowledge. People often say, well, why build these things? It's not like you can... it doesn't actually lead to anything practical, and that's really the basis of pure science. It's like an exploration. That there is no immediate purpose to it, but of course, down the road there are spin-offs. If we hadn't, for example, got involved in atomic physics and quantum mechanics all those years ago, we wouldn't have electronics today. We wouldn't have computers and all this kind of stuff. So eventually, there are spin-offs from it. But it is a very theoretical thing at the moment. Discovering the God particle, which is not a particularly good name for it, but the Higgs boson. It is the sort of the missing piece of the puzzle of standard physics. It's the last particle that was predicted to occur in what's called the standard model of all the particles we know about. It was the one missing piece of the puzzle. The particle that explained why all other particles have mass, and that one has now been found. The thing is, now we're looking for what comes next, because we know there are things in the universe that our current physics does not explain. For example, the nature of dark matter and dark energy, which is most of the universe, as it happens. A bit embarrassing for science that we don't know what more than 3/4 of the universe is, but that's a fact.
Was it worth the billions to build?
Well, speaking as a scientist, I think it is, because it's really the only instrument out there that's capable of finding these things at the moment. And if you want to make progress, as a species, and find out what the universe is really made of and possibly our place in the universe, you need equipment like that. And it's not really, compared to with military budgets, it's not that huge. I think it's quite a constructive thing to do. And I think it could lead on to great things in the future.
What have you found, David, over the past, let's say, 10 years? What has been the most fascinating discovery, in your opinion?
There's so many of them.
And they keep coming.
Yeah, I mean, exoplanets, planets around other stars, to me, are amazing, because in the early 1990s, we didn't know any planets.
But I bet you suspected that long before they were discovered.
Well, it would have been amazing if there hadn't been. I mean, because then you would have to think, well, what's so unusual about our own sun and the Earth and whatnot? So it would have been very, very strange if there hadn't been planets. But the number has surprised me. I mean, now it seems like almost every star will eventually be found to have a set of planets around it. It's like they're just part of the star making process. So that's come as a major surprise. And the fact that we're learning so much about these planets, we're finding out what their atmospheres are made of and possibly eventually what's on their surface. So that's came as a complete surprise, the speed at which we've discovered these things.
And what was the catalyst for this? The computer?
The computer was certainly part of so many scientific discoveries, because of the speed at which information can be processed with computers. better instrumentation all around, better quality optics in our telescopes, new ways of using telescopes in combination so that we can see fine details, because we're looking for wobbles in a star, tiny little wobbles as the star moves, and you need fantastically sensitive equipment to do that. So yes, technology, the advancement of technology is behind all this.
David, we're going to come back, take questions, and also I want to talk with you about something you mentioned, and that was the possibility of some kind of alien visitation possible. I want to get your take on that when we come back.